From a secret location in room 100 of 540 Jack Gibbs Boulevard, this is Craft. I'm your host, Doug Dangler.
Not too long ago, singer-songwriter Leslie Mendelson asked the age-old question, why don't they play rock and roll on the radio anymore? Today, we'll get to the bottom of that and other questions when we discuss her music and her March 14th performance in town with Six String Concerts. Welcome to Craft, Leslie Mendelson.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Continuing in the vein of the introduction, let's talk about your song, Rock and Roll on the Radio, which is featured on your YouTube page. It includes lyrics like, I remember when rock and roll could have changed the world any day now, a revolution, it's the only solution. Tell me about writing this song.
I did write it with my co-writer, Steve McEwen, and it was written a few years ago at this point. I even think right now radio is in a different place than it was back when we wrote it 3 or 4 years ago, because of the state of NPR and censorship and what is under the guise of free speech. But I think in general, this song just harkens back to a time when I feel like back in the 60s and 70s, there was movements, there was like music movements that I don't feel happens anymore. And I'm not saying people don't write good music, but I feel like, especially like I was watching that Dylan movie, the one that came out a couple of years ago, I was thinking about how important music was to people and how it meant more, because we were living in a, everything is a little bit more diluted and there's so much coming at you all the time. And it was maybe just a simpler time then too, but I feel like messages had a deeper meaning back then.
What songs do you have in mind for that? What were your touchstones for Rock and Roll on the Radio?
As far as like the messaging?
As far as the songs you were thinking about, the kinds of songs that aren't played anymore.
Oh, well, you know, I love Marvin Gaye, the Beatles. The perfect one is Crosby, Stills, and Nash, you know, with Ohio, something like that. But, I mean, as far as, like, the messaging, you know, you brought up the revolution. But it's more of just a feeling, you know, of just, like, loving rock and roll and just feeling nostalgic about a time that's past.
Yeah. The song itself is sort of Americana or maybe a little pop folk, which I thought was interesting because you didn't choose to have like screaming guitars in the background or something like that that might have signaled more of a rock sound. So was that something you thought about while you were writing it, or is it very intentional to have the music be something different from what you're harking back to?
Well, I think rock and roll is such a big term. Like, I feel like there, you don't need to have loud screeching guitars for something to have a spirit of rock and roll. Okay. I feel like the song itself, when I was playing it, the first time I actually played it, it was at a festival, 30A, down in Florida, and I was sharing the stage with Sierra Hall, and she was playing along with my songs that night, and she started playing the mandolin, and it was the first time I ever played the song live, and I was like, oh, that's great. And it reminded me of REM, Losing My Religion. So when I heard the mandolin, it felt like something of the direction I wanted to do with it, recorded in that style.
Right.
Yeah. And then we kind of just found its own way at that point.
I think that as soon as a mandolin touches a song, you've got a different song. So you know, I see what you're getting at there.
Yeah. And then we wound up not going full throttle with the mandolin, but I think it just, I love REM and I love, you know, I don't know. We were just kind of hinting at it a little bit.
What reactions have you gotten from the song? What have people said to you about it?
About the song, I think people like it. I remember the early days when I started playing a couple of years ago, when the song was still fresh. I feel like after I finished it, people would go like, I could hear people like, that's a hit, or like, that's a good one. And I always feel like it makes people happy. I love playing it. It's just got a jangly, fun feeling to it.
Rock and Roll on the Radio is from your 2024 album, After the Party, about which Peter Blackstock from No Depression commented, quote, it's my contention that After the Party is the best album released so far this year. What made After the Party such a special album for you?
Well, I didn't write that.
That's true. I meant it maybe in the larger sense of other people are seeing it.
I can't speak to my own work like that.
Yeah, that was not the interpretation I was expecting, but yes, you did not write that. But I'm curious about the album and whether, as you were recording it, felt this is something new, something different, something that I think is going to resonate with people. And I'm sure that's something that happens a lot during albums. I've never recorded one. So this is somebody from the outside saying, what's it like in the recording studio?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot to unpack here. So let's start with the ethos of the record a little bit. My 2020 record, If You Can't Say Anything Nice, was kind of a buildup and an explosion of like a lot of feelings that I had during the interim of writing that record. It came out in 2020. Things were very strange at that time. Oh, yeah. But, you know, it was a reaction of just the 24-hour news cycle, the opioid epidemics. You know, there was just a lot. I feel like I touched upon depression and isolation and a lot of things where it's not a joyous record, but it has a little bit more of a serious tone to it. It was very inspired by John Lennon's first solo album, Plastic Ono Band. After it came out, I felt relief in a way. I was glad it came out because then I wanted to start. And of course, it was the pandemic and I wasn't doing anything. But at some point, I was just like, okay, I wanted to start writing songs, but I didn't want to write about the pandemic. I'd already written about the time before the pandemic, which was already a very tense time. So I was just like, you know what? Let this record be more of a celebration of my favorite musical styles. I've never felt like genres ever held me back. So I wanted this to be a celebration of that. And so, you know, you have songs like Rock and Roll on the Radio or The Good Life, which is inspired by my love of like 70s country music, which is Willie Nelson and, you know, especially Glenn Campbell, Jimmy Webb. And then, you know, like After the Party itself is a very like New York tinged record, even though I did the album in LA at Jackson Brown Studio, which is another story with some incredible players. Living in New York, I felt like that's inspired After the Party by Andy Warhol picture of the same name, if you're not familiar with it. It's a table with like empty glasses and plates and ashtrays. I was thinking, I'm like, I want to be at that party, you know, and like Lou Reed kind of vibes. So it really spans the whole thing. And then I have a little bit more experimental stuff in the middle of it. Signs of Life, which is one of the first songs I wrote on the record, of like feeling like wanting to reach out and is there anybody out there? Like the Pink Floyd song. So it really just feels like it's just, like I said, a celebration of all of that.
Yeah. I get the sense that you're really attracted to sort of a 70s aesthetic.
A little bit.
Yeah, it seems to pop up maybe in some of the images on your website and some of the songs. Is that something that you're conscious of while you're doing it? Or, you know, I was alive in the 70s. There's a picture of me in a leisure suit and I was quite small. And so, you know,
I love a leisure suit.
It is.
That's when you probably could pick people up at the airport and meet them at the gate with a cigarette in your hand.
Yeah, that would have been unusual for a 6-year-old, but still, I could have done
it. No, I'm just picturing.
Yeah, it's tan and it has gigantic lapels that covered nearly the entire chest. So I
like when James Bond wasn't wearing a suit, he'd wear that.
Yeah, probably. That was exactly how people regarded me at the time, as a James Bond-esque 6-year-old.
As a 6-year-old. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that something that, like I said, you're sort of conscious of? You think of when you're doing this and you think back on that as a particular time that, you know, I can see a lot of people having more nostalgia.
I reference a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I reference a lot of my favorite albums from that time. I just love the way things were recorded. I love the, like we were talking about earlier, the messaging. And, you know, it's just, it's, I don't even know if it's like totally conscious. It's just what I like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, it's not like a decision to like, I want to make a record exactly like that. It just kind of happens, I think, through just the filter of what I like and who I am.
So After the Party has three producers, Peter Asher, Tyler Chester, and Steve McEwen. As someone like me who's never been in a music recording studio, I'm always interested when I see collaborative roles like that. How does that work out in practice? Does each person take a lead on a particular song? Is it three cooks in the kitchen for every song? How does that work?
Let's take Steve McEwen. He is my co-writer, and he was there with Peter first. I had written a few songs that I sent to Tyler Chester, and we recorded three songs together. And then I got this opportunity to work with Peter Asher. So I was like, oh, let's record with him as well. then sent some stuff to Peter and wound up recording with Peter. And then at the end of the day, I was like, oh, these all kind of work together. So we decided to put them together. But Steve, being my co-writer and also co-producing, he mostly co-produced with Peter. So it was like, you know, and then he was there with Tyler, even though Tyler probably took more of the reins as far as producing those songs.
It sounds interesting in the terms of, you know, like you said, negotiating how all that stuff works out. So that's my main interest in that is like how, when you've got that many people, how do you get something done? Because a lot of times it seems like, what is it? A decision by committee
Cooks in
is
the
often,
kitchen.
often criticized.
We pretty much had the songs. And when it came to Tyler, he's a very musical producer and he plays bass and he has a lot of sounds and vibes and things that he brought to the music. So I feel like Steve didn't really produce that. So it was kind of like he was there as a musician and I was working with Tyler a lot. He would add in too, but it just felt like, I don't know, when you work with people who know what they're doing. Like things are always up for discussion, but everybody kind of knows their place. And then when we decided to work with Peter suggested to Steve that why don't we co-produce this together? And then again, it just felt like a natural process. All the musicians that were involved. So when we worked with Peter Asher, we had Lee Sklar and Jim Keltner and Waddy Wachtel. Because he asked me, who would you like to work with? I'm like, I would love to work with these musicians. Again, 70s guys. And everybody, they know how to make records. So it wasn't a lot of deliberating. Everybody sat down and we played the songs. We played them through a few times. People had a few questions here and there, but it was kind of easy to make this record.
Excellent. Well, it's always good to hear when you have records like that because you'll hear so much about people struggling through records or having
Oh,
problems in
yeah.
the studio. And
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
yeah, that's great to
Yeah.
hear.
Definitely have had trouble. I'm a very emotional person, and records are hard, you know, especially like right now. I'm doing some stuff on my own and I'm learning Logic as I go, and I just want to like throw my computer across the room sometimes, you know. But like, I don't know, when it was a gift to work with all these musicians. And like I said, like really great players make it easy, they just know how to play.
Yes, it's something I'm very jealous of as
I
somebody who
am
doesn't have
too.
musical talent. Leslie Mendelson, thank you very much for talking to me.
Aw, so much for having me.
Yeah, we are looking forward to you being at the March 14th performance with Six String Concerts. I'll put more information about that online. And best of luck, Leslie Mendelson.
Thanks so much, Doug.
For more information from my guests, visit www.craftheshow.com. This is Doug Dangler. Until next time, be creative.